Laird Delaval was not a young man, and he surely felt every day of his nearly 60 years that evening.
If my nephew can be rid of that troublesome Ethelbert in the coming battle, I just might winter in Ethelbertos Entel this year, and every year thereafter.
Delaval spoke to Genofrey and Tadamist, his personal attendants and generals. The two men glanced at each other with obvious skepticism.
I know. Prince Sierzelnik is not known for his martial prowess.
But he has Bonagran, the Bear of Haunts, with him, my king.
Tadamist, who, along with Genofrey and all the others of Delaval's inner circle, had started referring to Delaval by the title all in Castle Delaval considered inevitable.
You know this one?
I know that his reputation is well earned, by every account, as is his title. They call him the Bear of Haunts, because of his great strength and size. And when he enters the field, the enemies flee.
I have seen him in battle, both when he was beside Pride's son Pride Day, those many years ago, and in our most recent fighting south of Pride Holding. If anything, his prowess in battle and in commanding his forces is greater than the whispered hussars. The Bear of Haunts indeed in strength and sheer power, but he is more than fox in cleverness. Prince Sierzelnik is well served by that one, and will win every day if he heeds the instincts of Bonagran of Pride.
Ah, that is good to know.
Laird Delaval started for his armoire, unbuckling his sword belt as he went. He knew that Genofrey and Tadamist were glancing at each other again behind his back, both of them concerned by his pained hobble.
I plan to live 100 years, my friends.
You will, my king, of course.
But these are dangerous times, and I fear that I've abused my body over the decades. Too many battles, too many hunts, too many women, and too much strong drink.
I hear no regret in your voice.
You were there for much of it. Do you believe that I should hold regrets?
Ah, but if our lives are 20 years shorter for the games of it all, then we'd have lived more than any man deserves.
Tadamus looked at his companion with horror that he would talk to the king so casually.
You've been here for more than 2 years, young swordsman.
Do you not yet understand?
Understand, my king?
That when it is just we three, you need not call me that.
But...
Oh, shut up. All the formalities are for those out there.
And out there, never forget your place or his title.
But in here, we are friends. Genofrey was by my side when he was just a boy, a groom. As he grew, he trained with me, and then became my constant companion in the wars. We saw men die, and often.
Too often.
Aye, and we've killed men, and goblins, and powries, side by side.
I am blessed to be here, my king.
Nonsense! You earned it with your skills. You remind me of a young Genofrey, and I assure you, that is no small compliment. Speak!
Your hot towels, my king.
It was the familiar woman's voice of Maddie Maccabee, another of Delaval's personal attendants.
Hot towels for aching bones.
Oh, what are you about?
Tadamus knew that scream and drew his weapons as he rushed to the door. From over his shoulder, Genofrey pulled out Spinebreaker, his legendary claymore, and Delaval slid his fine blade from its scabbard and let the belt fall to the floor. The door burst open before Tadamus got to it. In rushed Maddie Maccabee, though not of her own accord. She was already dead, her chest gashed open. She flew forward, tumbling before the dodging Tadamus. A Baronese man carrying a curved sword entered in a fast and steady walk. A man went by the combatants to Tadamus's right as he squared back up with his opponent. A woman entered next. Tadamus faded right as the woman, a fine sword in her hand as well, moved to pass him on the left. He wanted to intercept, but his opponent kept him dancing, kept him dodging. Genofrey was used to missing with his first swing. The claymore wasn't wieldy after all, and Genofrey never took pains to disguise his first attack. The blade came lumbering down from on high, and the warrior before him easily and gracefully leaped back into the side. Genofrey hid his grin, purposely seeming to overbalance as Spinebreaker thumped against the thick carpet. He even appeared to stumble. The warrior rushed forward to the side of him, pivoted fast, and came in with a straightforward thrust. But just as he started the turn, so too turned Genofrey. Dropping his foot back as he lifted and reangled his blade, he put it right in line to pierce the charging warrior. He thought he had a win, and the necessary quick one so that he could go to the side of his beloved Delaval. But the warrior leaped up high, front somersaulted above the level claymore, and landed in a run past Joffrey. The soldier tried to turn to keep up and felt the burn in his side, felt the warmth of his blood spilling from a long and deep gash.
Well, come on then, and be done with it.
Delaval spoke to the dark-skinned, slight woman, although he had no way of knowing if she even understood him. She just smiled and circled, her curved and decorated sword down low before her, its tip nearly cutting the threads of the carpet.
I need not ask who sent you. Long have we known that the traitorous Ethelbert favored the beasts of Bear.
You leaders of Hunt slaughter your people with impunity. And yet we of Bear are the beasts? Tell me, you who would rule the world, how do you measure such a title?
She came forward suddenly.
How much is he paying you? I will double it.
Shallow principles. We are beasts.
You intervene where you do not belong. You risk a war with all of Hunt's.
Idiot Delaval. You do not command all of Hunt's.
Tadamus did not hear Laird Delaval's gasp as Apwin Wee's blade punctured his belly. The young warrior heard nothing but the near-constant ring of metal as he and his shaven-headed opponent exchanged vicious and furious flurries. He felt the stab in his shoulder, felt his dirk arm go weak, and heard the weapon hit the floor. Joffrey did hear Delaval's gasp, a sound he had heard only once before in a far-off and long-ago battle in the Belt and Buckle Mountains. He reacted with a sudden and brutal straightforward thrust, stabbing his sword, then slashing it, then reversing it with a powerful backhand. He didn't get close to hitting his opponent, but he wasn't actually trying for a kill there. He drove the man back, back, and then he turned and charged across the way behind Tadamus and toward Delaval. He registered that Tadamus was in trouble, but there was nothing he could do at that time, for before him the woman was into another wild exchange with Delaval.
No!
Joffrey felt a slug in his lower back. He knew it to be a stab from his pursuing opponent. At the same time, he watched the Baronese woman's sword slide deep into King Delaval's chest. He finished his charge, unable to interrupt his own momentum, slashing Spinebreaker down hard against the woman's blade, but too late, of course. For that only jarred the impaled Laird. Joffrey stumbled forward, taking Delaval with him hard into the far wall. Somehow, Joffrey managed to hold his footing and hold his blade, turning about with his back against the wall. He saw the woman, in obvious distress, looking down at her sword, nearly half its blade snapped off. Whatever comfort that might have given Joffrey, though, ended as she thrust her arm at him and launched the remaining piece of her weapon. It took him a moment to realize that it had gone through his throat. He slid down to a sitting position. Joffrey heard Tadamist's cries, one after another, as the two men stabbed at him. He didn't see any of Tadamist's desperate last stand, though, for he could not take his eyes off the slight woman walking toward him. She bent low before him, stared into his eyes, and gave that wicked smile once more, then yanked her broken sword out of his throat. The lines of allies couldn't have been clearer to Dame Guaidra as she listened to Branson relay his tale of capture, escape, and ultimate victory over ancient Baden. Beside Branson stood the fallen monk Cormac and the barbarian woman Milkayla, with a pair of Powrys behind them. Across the way, to the left side of the room, sat Father de Gilb and his entourage, including Brother Jean, whom Guaidra knew was the link between these wildly disparate groups. Jean was a good man, an honorable man, who put moral duty first and foremost. Guaidra hoped that to be the case, for de Gilb had made no secret of his loathing for Cormac.
We had enough allies to get through the ancients' defenses.
It was not our place to go. I could not know of your predicament, Dame Guaidra.
We have already been over this, good father. No one holds you or your brothers at fault for the choice you made in retreating from the glacier.
No one?
And you slew Baden?
It would do great injustice to those around me, these four and two other Powrys, for me to make such a claim, lady. It was my blade that took his head, yes, but only through the sacrifice and efforts of those around me.
However it was done, it is appreciated.
It was done for a price. And now, good lady, with your generosity, I would ask that you extend that reward. I would have my writ of passage. I will go and collect my wife and her mother and travel hence as a free man, as I was promised.
Yes, you shall have it.
And I insist upon a similar writ for Cormac and Milcaela.
No. Cormac does not answer to the laws of the Lairds, but to that of the Order of Abel.
Are you saying that Chapel Abel will not honor my wishes?
I beg you not to do this, Dame Guidra. Brother Cormac betrayed us.
Have you anything to say in your defense?
I followed my heart. Everything I did because I believed it to be the will and manner of Blessed Abel, the calling of my order.
Betraying us to the barbarians.
Ending a needless slaughter. You held the men of Michaela's clan prisoner. We had no right.
You know nothing, you insignificant.
Silence!
The Alpinadorans of the neighboring islands would have all died at the base of our chapel before surrendering our captives to us. I could not tolerate that slaughter. There was no need for it.
So what did you do?
I freed the four men and showed them the way out of our dungeon to rejoin their people. The Alpinadorans left our island. The battle ended, and so ended the death. The death of Alpinadorans and of monks.
Dame Guidra turned to de Gilb, her expression cold.
A simplistic review.
Then do elaborate.
The men we held were not captured, they were rescued. Rescued from certain death and healed of grievous wounds through the power of Blessed Abel by the brothers of Blessed Abel.
That does not give us the right to hold them as prisoner. You cannot so coerce fealty to faith.
Our manner is of no concern to Dame Guidra. My orders came from Father Artelevan of Chapel Abel. To him alone do I answer.
True enough, but a writ is mine to give, and so I do, to both Cormac and this woman, Milcaela, though I would like to speak at length with you both before it is finalized.
Yes, Dame Guidra.
I would ask for writs for the other heroes of the fight.
Bloody cops!
Dawson McKeague was wide-eyed behind Guidra. And, indeed, the Lady of Vanguard, too, seemed more than a bit disconcerted at that suggestion.
Come forward.
Name's McQuiggick, and me friend's Bicklebrin. Come from the Julianthes, but spent 100 years on that Lake Mithranodoon with our friends.
And your friends are still there?
Still on the rock.
You do not wish to rejoin them?
Oh, seen too much of that smoking lake. Not for going back, unless going back for taking them off with us. But more than a few are wanting off that rock.
You ask much of me, Branson Garibond.
We gave much to you, at great risk.
I cannot grant Powrys the writ to walk freely through the lands of men.
Branson stood up very straight and crossed his arms over his chest.
Were I to grant you passage free of battle throughout all of Hants, would you agree to lay down your arms?
What? They're attached to our shoulders! You're saying we got cut off our arms to stay with you?
Your weapons. Were I to grant you passage, do I have your word of honor that you will not take up arms against any man or woman? That you will not do battle with any men?
Even them that's deserving it.
Even them. No battle, not ever. If I am even to consider giving you the writ Branson desires, then you must promise me that you will not ever again spill human blood. Can you make such a pledge?
I don't hear you whining that we spilled Baden's blood. Last time I looked, he was human. Headless, but human. Aye, and we dipped our caps in his blood, and mine's shining all the better. Where we come from, them needing a crack and get a crack.
That is not the way among men.
But them men with money and land and power, and them women with such, they get to pick them needing a crack. And when the crack's given, what?
It is by the law, good dwarf. The law is bigger than men and women.
Bigger than most. Not bigger than the lairds and the priests, from what I'm hearing. Even a Powry might walk free. What if a laird or lady says so?
I do not know. My writ for you might hold no weight beyond Vanguard.
McQuiggick spat upon the floor. Dame Guidra looked at Branson and shook her head.
This is beyond my power to grant.
Branson narrowed his eyes.
But I will offer this. When the weather breaks and the winter is no more, I will send you both back to the lake with wagons laden with supplies and with a map to take you and your kin to Brinewind, a port in Eastern Vanguard. From there, I will supply you with a boat and star charts so that you can sail for your distant home.
McQuiggick stepped forward and fell to the floor, where he sucked up his spit.
Oh.
McQuiggick stood up straight and smiled at Quaidra.
I am not sure what that means.
It means I ain't spitting at yourself anymore. It means me and me friend are liking what you're saying.
You would turn them free on the coast to lay waste to innocence.
They did not kill me, though they surely had the chance. When Father de Gilb cast me adrift, beaten and dying, the Powrys took me in.
More the reason to hate them.
Enough, Father de Gilb, you weary me.
And you overstep your province with Cormac and now with these two little murderers. I assure you that Chapel Abel will hear of this, all of this.
At the same time, they learn of the death of ancient Bodden, no doubt. And learn that Dame Gwydra has led them greatly in their battle with the Samhasts.
Who are you?
The man who helped save the life of the one not worth the trouble, it would seem.
Perhaps you should not be so secure of Dame Gwydra's writ, highwayman.
If you would counsel Father Otto Leven to ignore my writ, then you would counsel him badly.
You war with the Samhasts, and you would war with the Brothers of Abel, too?
Chapel Pelennor, all the chapels of Vanguard, exist by my grace alone. Do not ever forget that.
You are satisfied with her decision?
Cormac spoke to McQuiggick and Bilkerbrin when they were alone with Milkayla.
Oh, she didn't attack us, and that's something.
She assured you safe passage.
Yeah, and we're knowing it, and we're not thinking bad of her. She did good by us. We're knowing that. We don't mean we won't kill her one day and dip our caps in her blood, though. We'll be taking the wagon and the boat, and off we're going back to where we're belonging.
Cormac reached up and grabbed his cap, pulling it from his head.
Will you want this back?
Are you wanting to give it back?
No. I wear it as a reminder of some unusual friends. I wear it to remind myself not to be hasty in judging others until I know them.
To get you killed to death? We'll let you live to put a burr in Prague's fat arse, you don't. Word for him, and you'd been gutted on the beach that first day.
Cormac fell back as if slapped.
How am I to know when you're speaking true and when you're speaking in jest?
You're not. Not now and not ever.
Are you friends, McQuiggick and Bicklebrin?
What? We've been friends for 100 years.
To me?
If we're ever in the forest or on a boat and we see Cormac or Milkayla in trouble, then no will help you.
And we'll be thinking many times of the one human wearing a powdery cap and glad how he came by it, kicking Prague's ugly face.
Cormac patted each on the shoulder appreciatively as he left with Milkayla to go to their room across the hall.
I will miss those two.
The world seems less colorful already.
As she finished, she led Cormac's gaze down the hall where several grim-faced guards stood ready with long halberds and armored all in bronze.
Dame Gwydra did not err in granting them passage.
You speak to convince yourself, not me.
Cormac looked at his wife carefully and glanced over his shoulder at the closed door of the Powrys' room. He wondered if he was a fool. For had he been in charge, he would have trusted that pair of dwarves, would have given them a writ of passage.
No other laird would have honored that writ.
You know nothing of Hans.
I saw the looks on the faces of those here in Pelennor. McQuiggick and Bicklebrin would not have much of a life in the lands of your people. What life, I wonder, might Michaela find there?
A fine one.
I have little desire to be caught up in the endless drama that so marks your church.
Branson spoke to Brother Jean.
You know little.
I know much. I spent years as a slave in service to the Brothers of Chapel Pride.
A slave? Surely you exaggerate.
I lived in a hole in the floor and spent my days emptying chamber pots. True, in exchange they gave me bits of miserable cold food, and my dungeon wasn't open to the snow and the rain. They let me go.
The Brothers of Chapel Pride?
Chapel Abel. They let Dawson McKeague take me here to serve Dame Gwydra, though they knew that Delavall and that pathetic excuse of a man Yezelnik would have rewarded them greatly had they turned me over for execution.
But instead you were pressed into service you did not desire.
Aren't we all? I do not think Dame Gwydra wanted this war, nor did Crait and O'Corna and Vorna, nor Brother Jond.
The blind monk smiled widely at that, as if he saw something Branson could not.
What is it?
It does my heart good to hear you speak like that, my friend.
The door swung open to the room, and Father de Gilb and Brother Giavno entered.
What are you doing here?
He is here at my invitation. I've known this fine young warrior for many weeks now. We've shared the road of adventure.
You speak for him?
I do.
He befriends Cormac.
Cormac, who saved the folk of Mithranadun from certain doom, your chapel and clergy among them.
Beware your actions.
Cormac helped kill ancient Bodden. While you ran away, he battled the greatest foe of your order and of Dame Gwydra's holding. Perhaps it is Father de Gilb and his fleeing monks who should beware their actions.
Leave this place.
Stay!
Brother!
Good father, I serve Father Promujan of Chapel Pelennor. I name this man as a friend, for he has stood beside me in my trials.
As you helped me after our capture.
I'd no more abandon him than I would abandon my beloved Abel, Father de Gilb. He is a man of good heart and great courage. A man we should coax to the ways of Abel, not a man to be shunned.
And Cormac? Have you made an assessment of the former brother Cormac?
Should he appeal to Father Primujan for reinstatement in the order? I will speak honestly of that which I know regarding the man.
And you believe that I was wrong in excommunicating him?
I make no judgments of that which I do not know, Father. I know little of this man, Cormac, but I will speak honestly to that which I have seen, heard. His work against ancient Bardon was no small thing. But whether that absolves him of his actions on Mithranadun is not for me to decide.
Those actions should absolve him, particularly since he did nothing wrong on the island on the lake.
Be gone from this place!
If you will, Brother Jond, I think I will be going.
De Gilb didn't even look at him as he walked past, but Brother Giavno gave him a look that seemed regretful, almost heartbroken, almost apologetic. Exhausted from the squabbling in her audience chamber, from the incessant complaining of the unlikable de Gilb, from having to deal diplomatically with Powrys, exhausted from her own excitement and anticipation of the possibilities now that ancient Bodden was dead, Dame Gwydra wanted nothing more that night than to fall into the arms of Alandres, the brother of Chapel Pelennor, who had become more than a friend to her. The moment she entered her private chambers, where Alandres was waiting, she knew something was wrong. The man hadn't dressed down into his nightshirt, but was still wearing his heavy brown robes, and hadn't untied his uncomfortable sandals. He half stood, half sat on the edge of Gwydra's desk, his strong arms crossed over his chest, his expression stern. Thinking him distracted by something extraneous, Dame Gwydra walked over and reached up to stroke his face. He was looking right at her when he stiffened away from her touch.
What is it?
Father de Gilb is a powerful man in the Order of Abel.
So is Father Primujan.
Who supports Father de Gilb? And Father de Gilb has the ear of Father Artolevan.
I have not spoken to Father Primujan about the new arrivals from Alpinador, nor does it matter much concerning my own words.
You should not diminish him or contradict him, particularly on matters relating to the Order. As with the man Cormac, it is not your concern.
Cormac? Who helped defeat ancient Bardon and thus may have saved my people? That man, Cormac? That hero, Cormac, is not the concern of Dame Gwydra, who rules Vanguard?
His disposition in the church is a matter for the Order of Abel.
When have I said that it is not? My argument with de Gilb stemmed from his remarks to my man, the highwayman.
Your threat to him, you mean?
Alland, what is this about?
He stood straight and turned his back on her.
Alandres.
Dame Gwydra, Gwyde, I am a brother of Abel. I will always be such. My first and foremost love is forever my church and my prophet.
I have never asked you for more than that.
Haven't you? When you threaten the very chapels of my order, as you did with Father de Gilb, you place me in an uncomfortable...
And I am the Dame of Vanguard. The people of this land depend upon me for their welfare, as they depended upon my husband before me and my father before him. I will always be as such, And first and foremost in my heart is my responsibility to the people of Vanguard. I have never asked you to betray your order, to place me before a bell in your heart. And yet you are doing just that to me, right here and right now.
Your words to Father DeGil
were not an idle threat, I assure you.
Brother Alandres stared at her hard, but there was no blink coming from the woman, no backing down in the least.
You should leave.
Brother Alandres nodded and walked past Guaidra out of the room. Guaidra wiped away whatever tears were daring to form in her eyes and walked across the room to her private stock and poured herself a large glass of Boggle, a rare and precious wine, rumored to be made by woodland elves or some other such fairy folk. It had been a long day indeed. Laird Ethelbert couldn't hide the smile widening on his face as the scouts offered their reports. So it was true. His assassins had killed Delaval. Yezelnik had fled to Delaval City, taking much of his entourage with him, including his elite, well-armed, and bronze-armored warriors who had been so devastating to Ethelbert on the battlefield of late. Many of the support groups surrounding Pride Holding were apparently peeling away as well, falling back to guard Delaval City or falling off simply out of confusion.
Yezelnik will become Laird of Delaval Holding.
Ethelbert looked up as he finished to see all his scouts and generals and advisors staring at him, hanging on his every word.
This boy, Yezelnik, who has no understanding of warfare and who has never bloodied his blade on a living opponent.
We have accomplished all that we hoped.
Ethelbert nodded to Howen, but then addressed another of the scouts who had not yet offered his report.
What news from the north? Has Milwellis pivoted?
No, my lad. I mean, yes, my lad, but not toward us. He went north to Chapel Abel and the coast. From there, he marched east, but then back to the west, as if unsure.
And now?
Back east of Chapel Abel, along the north reaches of Felidon, but still west of the Mantis Arm. He has not sought engagement since his victory at Paltry.
Because he thinks his legacy safe, and thinks the war nears its end. He paused because he expected the battle to commence here, an obvious rout for Delaval. And while I was in retreat to the southeast, Milwellis could move east with ease, against holdings unsure of their allegiance to my obvious losing cause.
Obvious, my Laird Ethelbert, but the battle will not commence here, as Milwellis anticipated, and our withdrawal will not be retreat.
Delaval's forces slide away. They are confused and demoralized.
Kieran Howen looked at the man slyly.
Perhaps the battle should commence here, and now. We had thought to make the attempt and withdraw post-haste, but since we have been more successful than we ever deemed possible, is it possible that Pride Holding is within our grasp?
They maintain a sizable garrison, but they are in confusion.
Do we dare not seize the opportunity, Merrick? What might be the gain, I wonder?
Pride Holding.
And Prince Yeselnik suing for peace on our terms.
And Banagran. Can we do it?
Kieran Howen didn't answer. He looked around questioningly at the scouts.
I can know by this very evening.
Calculate, then. We must act quickly if we are to act at all. Before Yezelnik's advisors, Laird Delaval's old, competent warriors, mitigate their confusion and protect their flanks. I believe we can do this. We have struck a mortal blow, but only if we press the wound before it is tended.
You see their eyes?
Lady Olam spoke to her husband as they were hustled through the streets of Delaval City toward the main keep, where Laird Delaval lay in state.
They revere you.
Prince Yezelnik had indeed noticed the many stares, hopeful, pleading, wounded all at once, their intensity nearly stealing his breath and the strength from his legs. Laird Delaval, King Delaval, was dead. Only then did the implications of that reality truly hit Yezelnik, the favored nephew, the Laird of Pride, the Prince of Delaval's haunts. His private giddiness turned to terror when he entered the audience chamber, the Hall of State, to see his mentor, Uncle Delaval, laid out upon a stone sarcophagus. The man appeared serene in death, his face chalky but relaxed, arms crossed over his chest.
I wish for more privacy!
Immediately, the guards began clearing everyone from the room. Yezelnik didn't wait, but staggered over to the body and fell to his knees beside it, overwhelmed. He grabbed his uncle's hands and squeezed the cold flesh. Delaval's robe opened enough for him to see the wound, still torn open, for in cleaning the man, the dried blood had been washed away. Yuzlimik slapped his hand over the open gash and then pulled it away. He stared at his hand in horror, seeing a cut on his palm, his own blood dripping from the wound.
It is the sword tip, my lad.
You left it in him?
It is customary to disturb the body as little as possible.
You left it in him, the sword that killed him? Take it out! Take it out this moment!
My lad!
Pendergrast, the father of Chapel Delaval, shuddered.
Take it out!
This is hardly the time.
Now! Take it out of him now!
Pendergrast saw the horrified expressions worn by the people still in the room. The father of Chapel Pelennor moved hastily but awkwardly to the body of his fallen laird. He looked around again, his gaze settling on the still fuming Yeselnik, and then he focused on the wound, working his fingers to widen the gap in the torn skin. He started to pull, but it would not come free. Sweating now, Father Pendergrast glanced anxiously up at Prince Yeselnik again. The man stood resolute and unblinking. Pendergrast moved quickly to use his voluminous sleeve to try to mitigate the mess on Laird Delaval's chest. He turned at the sound of Yeselnik's approach, showing the obstinate prince the blade as he did, the slightly curving, etched, and decorated blade. Misreading him, Father Pendergrast moved the blade away, or started to, but Yeselnik reached out and grabbed him by the arm, holding it fast. Yeselnik grabbed the blade, taking it from the surprised father's grasp.
What is it, my prince?
I know this blade.
Indeed, Yeselnik did know the blade, being twice the victim of the man called the Highwayman. Castle Pride loomed above the tree line behind them. They had been pushed back to the very edges of their town, their backs literally to the walls of their outlying farms. One after another, the defenders of Pride glanced back at that keep, their last refuge, and it seemed to offer little hope against the ferocity of the advancing men of Ethelbert Dos Entel. The first force came against them, a disorganized mob of Ethelbert's leading line, seemingly oblivious to the defenders crouched behind the bluff. They came on almost casually, right to the fence. Up jumped the defenders, spears stabbing wildly. Before those retreating few had even crossed the field, however, Ethelbert's main line came out of the trees across the way. Now, with the defenders' position clearly defined, the attackers gathered in a tight group in the center and sent out lines to flank left and right. Without delay, they came on. The full weight of Ethelbert's center came against them, pressing and stabbing and slashing. The attackers pressed over the bluff, driving the valiant defenders of Pride under the sheer weight of their numbers. On came Ethelbert's hundreds, seeing the Tower of Pride before them, not so far, seeing victory, not so far. The men of Pride Town broke ranks and ran. The men of Ethelbert ran ahead even faster. Ahead of them all, the shouting started in the town. Among those retreating along the road arose fears that Ethelbert had a second force pressing Pride from the north. What else could incite such commotion in a town so far ahead of the retreat? Out of the gates of Pride Town he came, dressed all in bejeweled bronze armor and driving the chariot of Pride A, a cart of war not seen since the former laird's demise. A rack of spears beside him, his legendary great axe waving high above his head, Bonagran came on in splendor, unafraid, eager for battle. Behind him surged the rest of Pride's garrison, some on chariot, most just running and waving pitchforks and clubs. Those on the road parted as he neared, for he showed no sign of slowing.
Charge ahead!
The road behind him crowded with soldiers, now running back to the south, back toward Ethelbert's approach. Bonagran rushed in front of it all and showed no sign of slowing the fabulous chariot and his mighty team. Ethelbert's leading line loomed before him now, but he didn't make any move to veer or halt. To those before him, he seemed in the grip of suicidal glee. But to those behind him, he appeared as the heart of Pride, the champion, the warrior. Ethelbert's men in Bonagran's path set their spears for his charge, digging them in to skewer the team. But Bonagran dropped his axe to the flooring beside him and took up a spear, veering his team as he neared and letting fly one missile after another. Bonagran turned the chariot back in line and plowed ahead, for now the integrity of the block was gone, and now the armored team and the spiked wheeled chariot crashed through. Then Bonagran had his axe. The chariot crashed through a thicket and nearly broke apart at the wheels, caught on some roots. Never slowing in the least, Bonnegrand merely leaped from the cart, great axe in one hand, spear in the other. No man would stand against him. His roar stole their strength. His axe sheared their limbs and crushed their bones and let their blood.
Rally, men! Rally!
The center of Ethelbert's line collapsed. The men of Pride, working in a wedge formation with Bonnegrand at their tip, pressed through, widening the breach, splitting Ethelbert's forces asunder. The spectacle of Bonnegrand, the great bear of Hans, commanded too much attention of the men of Ethelbert, allowing the charging forces of Pride to cut deeper, to gain more strength and momentum. It was Ethelbert's line that broke that day, the old laird and his forces retreating fast to the south. Silent as the shadow he crossed, Jameson Sequin moved along the line of pines, circumventing the drifts of snow with practiced ease. He knew this place, this tended grove, and he knew, too, that he was likely being watched. He knew the watcher, though, and had come to see that very man. Still, he kept his caution and covert manner, unsure of who might be gathered around, and one he expected was more than aware of his presence. A large raven flopped onto the branch of a nearby pine and looked right at him. The bird hopped down, and before it ever landed on the ground, transformed suddenly, and with a bright flash of light, into an old man, bald and with a beard braided by clumps of dung, dressed in light green robes, a heavy fur cloak, and open-toed sandals. Only a Samhaste priest could keep his feet from freezing to black with those feeble shoes.
One day I'll catch you unaware,
or I'll grow tired of your trying.
Jameson knew it to be a good-natured threat. Despite all their differences, despite Jameson siding with Gwydra against the troll and goblin hordes of Baden, despite Jameson's obvious disdain for the Samhaste religion, Wistawig was not an enemy. Not a friend, perhaps, but not an enemy.
So, Baden's gone.
Killed by Dame Gwydra, and by his own arrogance. He did find Mithranadun, and that is no small thing, of course.
You disagreed with his war.
It was not my place to agree or disagree. I do not remember Baden ever asking my opinion.
I love the hierarchy of learned men.
Spare me your incessant sarcasm, Scout. You come on behalf of Gwydra, I expect.
Indirectly. As much for my own curiosity as for her needs. There's less activity now. I've seen no sign of goblins or trolls moving south.
Winter is on in full force in the Northland.
They fought through the winter last year. Ice trolls favor that season.
The old Samhaste made no move to respond.
Winter favors them in battle, but your folk aren't sending them to Vanguard.
Oh, if you have all the answers, why do you bother me, Scout?
I have all the suspicions. I'm looking for the answers.
You ask that I would ease Gwydra's mind?
Ease the minds of lots of folk.
You presume that I have a responsibility to people who have turned their backs on the old gods.
No. I just think you're a decent enough fellow, despite those robes you wear.
You're quite wise for an idiot, yes? Or quite the decent murderer, don't you think?
I've never hid my feelings for your church or the other one.
You've never hidden your feelings on any matter, which is why I tolerate you.
Just tolerate? Should I be insulted?
We could banter like this all day long, I fear.
We have before.
I'm glad the war is over.
Is it?
You will not take my word to Dame Gwydra.
I can tell her enough without it, but I'm glad to hear it.
Mr. Wigg's nod showed that they had a mutual understanding and agreement here.
Who will be the next ancient? Wistawig?
That is for the old gods to decide.
And will the one they name start the war anew?
You speak of something a decade removed. We are not as impatient as the Brothers of Abel. The successor will not be named this year, possibly not even next year. And after that, he will have many months of work ahead of him in just informing the groves and calling in his disciples.
You surrender Vanguard to the monks?
Not so. We know that the Brothers of Abel will fail in the end. Their baubles are impressive until the deathbed,
And there they have no answers, just empty promises. Those who follow them pass on unprepared for the judgment of the old gods.
And those dead ones will come back and discredit the monks.
The ghosts speak to us. In the end, we Samhastes, not the monks, hold the answers most needed. If I did not have faith in that, I would not wear these robes.
Jameson conceded the point with a nod.
Patience. It is a necessary virtue, and one perhaps that Baden lost in his last years. Events prompted change in Vanguard, and he wished that errant course corrected before his passing. We do not consider our ancient to be the sole proprietor of godly wisdom, Scout. You know that much, at least.
So many disagreed with Baden's war?
No, I thought it an unnecessary provocation. In the end, we will win, and we'll need not enlist goblins and trolls and powries and barbarians to achieve the victory, because we are right, Scout. Because our gods are true. We will win.
Dawson McKeague tried to stay seated, but he couldn't manage it. He kept getting up and pacing around the thick carpet, his eyes scanning the closed door at the side of the room. He knew what was going on in there. Guaidra had asked him to stay with her this evening because she had discerned the tone of Brother Alandres when he had arrived earlier that day, and Dawson trusted her instincts implicitly. The man straightened as the door opened and Dame Guaidra came through. One look at her told McKeague that his hopes for some reconciliation had been in vain. She stared into his eyes, her face very tight, and she nodded curtly, as if giving any further movement would cause her to dissolve.
He's a fool, then.
Dame Guaidra walked past him and patted him on the shoulder as she moved to sit stiffly on the divan, eyes unseeing. Dawson was quick to her side.
For the best.
I would have ended our love affair if he had not. It was too much trouble now.
Now that the war's looking to be over. And ain't that the irony?
With ancient Baden looming, I had no time for quibbles with the brothers of Abel. Now that Baden is gone, I expect that I and the church will face some trying moments of disagreement.
Well, Andres wasn't man enough to keep him separate. He'd have kept jumping in at you whenever you took a stand against his masters. As with de Gilb.
All true.
If he loved you...
Guaidra put her hand up to stop that line of thinking short.
Once he did love me, and I loved him. It was not convenience that brought us together. Indeed, at the time we started this relationship, I thought it the least convenient thing in all the world.
But did he?
Guaidra eyed Dawson curiously.
I mean, there's no doubt the brothers of Abel gained greatly through the relationship. Their fight with the Samhase added a powerful ally because of Brother Alandre's loins.
Dawson!
The sailor shrugged, but didn't retract.
I would not have sided with the Samhastes in any event, and that much was clear before Alandres and I fell in love. As their grip on southern haunts eroded, ancient Baden grew ever more demanding and desperate and vicious.
Aye, I know. And Alandres loved you. I know that, too. Though I'm wanting to punch the fool in the nose right now.
Well, you can't blame him for this. It's been a long time in coming, and it is for the best.
Still would feel good to punch him.
I am quite the fool. To get involved with a monk at a time such as this. Nay, to get involved with a monk at all. Oh, what pain have I brought upon my people. I have betrayed their trust for the sake of my own selfish needs.
You betrayed nothing. 'Twas Baden who betrayed you, who betrayed us all. He held Vanguard hostage to protect his losses in the south. He demanded of us, of you, that which you could not do. Were you to deny the folk the blessings of the monk's gemstones? Were you to let the sick and injured die because Baden didn't want the monks praying over them with the soul stones? The
situation wasn't so bad before my tryst with Alandres.
Before the war in the south turned the folk of Hans away from the Samhaste, you mean? Wasn't about you and wasn't about your monk lover. Baden's desperation came from knowing that his priests were being chased from half the holdings of Hans. And even where they stayed in their groves, the lairds weren't listening to him. Delaval and Ethelbert have the whole of Hans in flames. And the folks are suffering. And that suffering, they've turned to the brothers of Abel and their gemstones and away from the Samhastes.
Guaidra considered the reasonable rebuttal for a few long moments, then nodded and smiled her gratitude at this man, her friend, Dawson. Dame Gwydra continued to pace the room long after Dawson had gone. She did feel much better than when she had walked out of her meeting with Alandres. Dawson was a valuable friend to her, unafraid to speak to her as a friend and not as his liege lady. Truly, he was a shining gem to Gwydra. He kept her grounded, kept her humble, and she knew that his love for her was unconditional, that if she were thrown down the next day from her position of authority and cast penniless into the street, Dawson McKeague would treat her no differently and no less affably. Some of his honesty that night had stung, though, she had to admit. She didn't think that Dawson had mentioned the gains her tryst had brought to the brothers of Abel simply to make her feel better. There was a ring of truth in his claim. Too much, she decided. And so, instead of going into her private chambers to don her bedclothes, Gwydra, Dame of Vanguard, went into the cold winter night. The brothers of Chapel Pellinore had just finished their evening prayers when she arrived at their door. Father Primujan did not deny her request for an audience, nor did he say anything when she entered the room and told his attendants, who included Father de Gilb, to leave the room.
May I help you, lady? This is most unusual.
I was visited by one of your brothers this night.
I see. And who?
I'll not speak around it. You know well of my relationship with Brother Alandres, and you know by now that the relationship ended this night.
Dame Gwydra, I am not...
Father?
I know. Of course, I know.
As you knew of it when it commenced.
The father tilted his head and eyed her curiously.
Before it commenced, perhaps?
Now, how would I have known that?
Because you blessed Brother Alandres' decision this night and those months ago, when we first began our relationship.
Good lady, what do you imply? Do you believe that I sent Brother Alandres to your bed?
Our relationship benefited Chapel Pellinore greatly.
Indeed, you were a mighty ally in our struggles with Barton's Sam Hastes, but I expect that you would have supported us over him in any case.
A cool war of words and not a fighting battle.
True enough. So, now you fear that I orchestrated your relationship with Brother Alandres, that I sent him to you, hoping you would fall in love for the sake of Chapel Pellinore.
Gwydra didn't answer the charge.
I did not. When Brother Alandres became smitten with Dame Gwydra, he came to me and confessed in full, and he was a man in terrible conflict. He understood the implications of any advances he might make, both for the church and for his continuing role in the order. What would you have had me say to him, Dame? Generally, my orders frown on such relationships, of course, but we often make exceptions, or merely let the situation quietly run its course.
Quietly?
Such situations do not usually involve a laird or a dame.
And in this case? Which course did Father Primujan prefer?
That you and Brother Alandres would find love, and that such love would bring benefit to Chapel Pellinore and help us rid the land of the vile Samhastes.
Dame Gwydra fell back a step, surprised by his forthrightness.
What would you have me say? What would you have had me do? I saw the gain to my order, to be sure, and did not dissuade such a beneficial outcome. But, milady, good Dame Gwydra, not I nor any of my surrogates sent Brother Alandres to court you. In no way. We simply decided not to interfere with nature's course. And now, this evening, no one here bade Brother Alandres to bring an end to your relationship.
It is my friendship and trust with you that placed me on the side of your order against Barden's Samhastes, you know. My love for Brother Alandres did not determine my actions.
But it spurred many of Barden's, to the great benefit of Vanguard in the end.
Gwydra spent a long night thinking of her many days with Alandres, days in the sun and in the snow. She laughed and she cried that night. She let the light and the darkness have their play in her emotions. For the next morning, Dame Gwydra had to let it all go, had to be again the leader of her people in a time that was far from settled and far from safe.
The nearer Samhaste Grove is empty, they say.
Caedale spoke to her mother, Callan Duarne.
How would they know? For who would go?
They went before the snows.
So before the snows, the Samhaste went away?
And he hasn't returned.
They're not knowing that.
And they're whispering that the war is over.
Every hope to hang on.
Caedale knew that her mother was only looking out for her with her constant words of caution, and she knew, too, that all the people in this new town, Tanadun, were hanging desperately onto any bit of hopeful information. They were all refugees here, all displaced from a place they had once called home, and all with family serving in Gwydra's army against the terrifying onslaught of the monstrous minions of ancient Baden. A few weeks before, word had gone out that the local Samhaist had deserted his grove, and the people of Tanadun had taken it as a sign that the war had ended. But new reports of goblin or troll incursions had continued to surface. The war had rolled along. Three of the families in Tanadun had lost loved ones soon after the initial reports of the deserted grove had begun to raise the hopes. But over the last 3 weeks, the reports of battle had slowed to a stop, and no news of further tragic losses had been delivered to Tanadun. That lull had added life to the excited whispers that maybe, just maybe, the tide had turned.
There's been no smoke over the grove. In the cold, even the Samhaist would need a fire.
So it might be that he's not there. Might be that he's dead, and you won't ever see Callan Dwarne crying over the death of a Samhaist.
Now they're whispering that the war's over.
They've been whispering that since we got here, and we're all wanting it so bad that we're listening to every word.
I miss him. More and more each day. I know he'll come home to me, but I fear he's lying dead on a snowy field. And then I feel as if I'm betraying my love for doubting him. I don't know.
I do. I know that what you're feeling is what I'm feeling. Don't you doubt that I love that husband of yours. He saved my life as his mother and father saved my life. And yours. Keep your faith in him. Branson has overcome greater trials than most men, and it will take more than a goblin to kill him.
Kaedale managed to smile at that, and a nod, and she turned from her mother to the cabin door, thinking to go out and retrieve more wood for the fire. She pulled her meager shawl about her as she went through the front door into the driving storm, her mother's scolding voice echoing in her ears. For weeks, Callan had been telling Kaedale that she needed to eat more to put some fat on her body for the coming winter. But Kaedale hadn't found her appetite in a long while and had lost quite a bit of weight since Branson had departed. She went to the woodpile on the side of her porch and bent to retrieve some, but as soon as she reached for the logs, a gust of wind flapped the shawl back over her shoulder.
A woman, poorly dressed and vulnerable.
A hand on her shoulder clasped tightly and spun her about. Spun her to face her husband, standing right behind her, grinning like a happy fool.
Branson!
Callan ran onto the porch and joined in the hug. Branson extended an arm to bring her in closer and to loop his cape over her against the freezing wind.
How? When?
Branson hushed her by putting a finger over her lips, and he ushered both of the women back inside.
Tell me that you're home. That you're really home. That your days in the war
are over.
Oh!
I killed him.
What?
Dame Gwydra knew that to win the war meant to cut off the head of the serpent. I did that. I killed Ancient Bodden, who led the Samhaists, who sent the hordes against Vanguard. He is dead by my hand, and there is hope throughout Pelennor that the war is dead with him.
Hope? But we do not know.
It is over for me, by Gwydra's own word.
Branson reached to his belt and pulled forth a rolled parchment.
She told me to kill Bodden for the reward of my freedom, to go wherever I would with her writ of passage in hand. We are free. All crimes forgiven. We can go wherever we want.
Kaedale grabbed him again, one hand on either side of his face as she locked his gaze with her own.
Do not ever leave me again. Promise me that you won't ever leave me again.
I won't.
Don't make promises you cannot keep.
The war in Vanguard is no longer my affair. I am done here. I am done with war. I am done with running from guards. We'll find peace now. We'll live in peace, we three. I am at peace and in love, and happy with you beside me. The fighting is done.
I have scrubbed it, and I still cannot remove all the bloodstains.
Jaselnik held up the broken blade for Bonagran to view.
But enough so that we know this blade.
It looks like the highwayman's.
It is the highwayman's! I knew that beast would prove nothing but ill to Hans. I implored my uncle to hunt him down and kill him.
Bonagran rubbed his face, fearing where this might be going.
Oh, would that he had never been allowed to walk out of Pride Town, with Laird Pride's blood on his hands.
It is not as simple as that.
Isn't it?
No.
You have redeemed yourself in any case.
Bonagran bowed.
I am the Laird of Delaval now, and the King of Hearts. All of the Holdings will accept that as soon as we rid ourselves of this troublesome Ethelbert. He is on the run to the south, in no small part because of the exploits of Bonogram the Hero, the Bear of Haunts, I am told. You do smell like a bear, I'm sure of that.
Laird Ethelbert backed us into a corner with his bold attack. Truly, I did not expect that he would move so decisively.
But you turned him, broke his line, sent him fleeing.
We had no choice in the matter. Charge and win or die. We chose to fight.
No, Bonogram chose to fight, and his choice dragged along the men of pride and those Delaval soldiers I left behind. That is the essence of a leader, and I intend to reward it.
As you will, my king.
I will name you the Laird of Pride. No more the steward, but the Laird, who will pass the ownership and title down to his own children.
I have none.
Then make some, dolt! Or name a nephew as an heir, as wisely did King Delaval. I will see this done as soon as we attend to pressing needs.
To finish off Ethelbert.
I will see to that. I have sent emissaries to Laird Panlamaris and his cowardly son Milwellis to dispatch his forces to the east and then south along the inner coast. I doubt that any will stand against him, but neither shall Ethelbert find his escape in that direction. We will push him right back to his city on the sea this time, and there will be no escape. The Lairds of the Mantisarm will join with me now. Their ships will blockade Ethelbert. There will be no escape, and I will push the imbecile right into the Mirianic.
The Man of Pride will march with you, my lad.
King! The coronation is a mere formality. Haunts is mine.
My king.
And pride is yours, Laird Bonogram. The men of pride will march with me indeed, but not all of them. Not Bonogram, the new Laird of Pride.
The Bear of Haunts looked at him curiously. King Yuselnik handed the sword to Bonogram.
Find him! Find the highwayman, Bonogram of Pride. Find him and kill him. You can serve your king no better way than to serve me the highwayman's head on a banquet tray. Do that, and Pride Holding is yours and your family's forevermore. With borders, we will expand.
Bonogram eyed the sword more closely, remembering when he had done battle against the man who wielded this very blade.
Find him and kill him!
There is talk that he will be put in line as heir to the lairdship of Vanguard.
Father de Gilb waved his arms frantically. Father Primujan shook his head.
Cormac is not even of Vanguard. Dame Guidra would do no such thing as that.
I heard it. Do you deny that he has been named a hero of the Holding?
All who participated in the battle with Ancient Baden have been so named.
Brother Jean sat on a bench at the side of the hall.
Except the Powrys, of course. Dame Guidra made up some other title for them, one that carries no consequence.
And you agree with the bestowment?
For the Powrys?
For Cormac?
Speak freely.
Why, yes, I do. Of course I do.
He betrayed your brethren.
Dame Guidra is not of our order and does not answer to us. Her titles are secular alone. Despite your hatred for the man, you cannot deny that he bravely battled Ancient Baden. Had it not been for him, it is unlikely that Baden would have been overcome. And his fall is to the benefit of us all.
And if Cormac becomes Laird of Vanguard? What then for Chapel Pellinore and the Order of Blessed Abel in his Vanguard?
Father Primujan just shook his head at the ridiculousness of the premise.
I bid you, Father, for your own sake, to search this hatred you hold for this man Cormac. I have known him but a short time, true, but his character seemed to me in alignment with the precepts of the Order.
Brother...
He betrayed Blessed Abel to the barbarians.
Did he? Or was it Father de Gilb, frustrated after years of wandering the terrible environment of Alpinador, who clung to stubbornness beyond all reason and morality?
I will not be spoken to in such a manner by a brother.
Enough, Brother John.
The blind monk settled back on the bench, seemingly quite pleased with himself.
I will not have this. You will punish this brother severely, and I will have Cormac punished as well.
He is in Dame Guidra's charge.
Then demand of the Dame. Cormac parades around in a powery cap, arm in arm with a shaman of Alpinador. He mocks us openly and with impunity. You cannot allow this to stand. His mere presence will erode support for us here in Vanguard and will diminish respect for Blessed Abel.
It was Father de Gilb who demanded of Cormac that he always wear the cap.
Father Primujan motioned to a pair of younger brothers to take the blind troublemaker out of the chapel.
And she is a most lovely woman, this Milkela of Yarn Awesome.
The brothers helped him to his feet and began escorting him from the room.
Calm in temperament, generous in heart, and fierce in battle. I need not see with my eyes to know that she is most beautiful.
Brother, go in peace.
Our order would be enhanced greatly if we could coax her to us.
No more so than if we purchased a mule. This Milkayla is rather like a domesticated animal, don't you think? And with the appearance of one. I would ask you again to exact punishment upon Cormac.
He is not Brother Cormac any longer. He is not of our order.
He was of our order when he betrayed the emissaries of Abel. He was meant to die for his treason. Only through unfortunate circumstance does he still draw breath.
But he did not die, and so he was banished from your island, appropriately so.
It is different now.
What would you have me do?
Take him from Gwydra to be judged by his peers. Take him in chains as a heretic.
He has suffered his entire life.
Into his 30s now, Riandu's face showed the strain of the last couple of years. Father Jarek of Chapel Pride had declined to a point of incoherent babbling, and Riandu had to take up the reins in these most trying times, with all of the responsibilities, but none of the imprimatur of the office.
And he suffers to this day, I am sure. Every step comes with the grimace of the pained stork.
The stork who killed Pride.
Riandu smiled knowingly, sadly. The stork hadn't directly killed Pride, after all, but had simply ducked Bonagrand's thrown axe, which had then struck down the laird. Bonagrand's anger as he spoke Branson's name was rooted in deep guilt, Riandu knew. Much of his own guilt over Master Bathalace gnawed at him, and that was never a good thing.
Branson has moments of surprise, I agree, but you know his life story as well as any. The loss of his mother and father of Garibald Womack. He carried chamber pots. It was all he could manage. He lived in a hole.
I do not envy him his miserable existence. Do you recognize this?
Is that Branson's blade?
It would appear. How many like this could there be? This blade was pulled from the chest of King Delaval. How many like this one, Riandu?
In Bear?
In Haunts.
We know that Ethelbert has many ties to Bear where such blades...
Enough! Our own stork was a party to the group who murdered King Delaval. So says King Yzelnik, and so it is true.
I know. Yzelnik came to Chapel Pride this morning. King Yzelnik.
I would remind you that your tone will hold consequences, Master Riandu.
You approve of his ascension.
It is not my place to approve or disapprove. It simply is. I am a subject of Pride Holding, which is indebted to and in alliance with Delaval Holding. We threw our fealty to Laird Delaval, who proclaimed himself king, and his successor was his choice alone.
You didn't answer my question.
There is no answer to such a foolish question. Yzelnik is king of Haunts, by Yzelnik's word. Laird Ethelbert will try to foil him, but Laird Ethelbert will fail.
And since the King of Haunts would see Branson dead, so Branson is condemned?
Yes. What do you know of his whereabouts?
No.
Brother, I insist.
There is word that he traveled through Palmaris town, heading generally east in the direction of Chapel Abel. I do not know if he ever made it there, for there has been nothing more. I do not even know if he truly made it as far as Palmaris town, for that has never been confirmed by the Chapel of Precious Memories.
When was this?
Months? A couple, at least. Not long after his departure from Pride Town. Why do you care?
Because the king told me to care.
You're charged with catching him and killing him.
I should have done that long ago, for the death of Laird Pride.
No! No, you chose wisely. The people of Pride love you all the more for the mercy you showed.
His voice trailed off as Bonagrand held up his hand, begging silence.
Branson is not an evil man.
That is not my decision. He is complicit in the murder of the king, so he is guilty in treason against the throne. So says Yzelnik, and so it is. It simply is.
Kaedale stiffened reflexively when she heard the horses rambling into town outside her door. The last time she had heard such a ruckus, her husband had been taken from her. Branson gave her a hug and assured her that all was well. They went to the window together where Branson pulled the curtain aside. They recognized Dawson McKeague immediately, riding a horse with an escort of several grim-faced soldiers and a single empty wagon.
To take us where we wish to go.
With winter coming on so strong.
Trust in Dame Gwydra. I have her word.
Kaedale motioned toward the window then. Branson turned to see Callan, who had gone across the road to borrow some spices, moving over to speak with Dawson, who smiled widely at the sight of her and tipped his floppy hat. Kaedale started for the door, but Branson held her back and bade her to watch the exchange. The undeniably pleasant exchange. Dawson hopped down from his horse and even kissed Callan's hand. Suddenly, the men around him didn't seem quite so grim-faced any longer. The young couple went on to the porch.
Greetings!
Oh, have you found another battle to which to drag my husband?
Oh, no, no, good lady. Your husband's heroics in the Northland seem to have ended all that.
The war is truly over?
What we're hoping, at least. No fighting, no goblins, no trolls, and no Samhace that we can find. I'm thinking that Dame Guaidra's gamble did its work. And wouldn't that be a grand thing for all of Vanguard?
It would indeed. I hope it's true.
Then why have you come?
Dawson stepped back as if slapped.
You came here for us, didn't you? For Brenson, at least, but it can't be time for him to sail the Gulf.
Oh, I wouldn't be putting my Lady Dreamer out now, so late in the season. Not if all the demon dactyls were chasing me.
But you are here with an empty wagon.
Guilty, my lady. We came for you. All three, with an invitation from Dame Guaidra for you to winter at Castle Pelennor.
Back to Pelennor? Why?
It is more comfortable than here, of course. You've earned that, at least.
Branson knew better and shook his head in reply.
There's trouble.
He's done fighting for you.
Not that kind of trouble. I weren't lying to you when I said that all was at peace, good lady. No fighting to be found and none asked of Branson. Nay, this trouble is with the Brothers of Blessed Abel.
A group for which I care little. I put them not so far above the Samhaste, to be honest.
Brother Jund, he calls you his friend.
I am.
And Cormac?
He's no longer of that order.
But the order isn't letting him go so easily. Father de Gilb is a fiery one, full of anger. Anger aimed at Cormac. Cormac's been arrested.
Father Primujan put him in chains?
Dame Guaidra took him. She had no choice in the matter. Father de Gilb demanded it of Father Primujan. The big idiot de Gilb apparently has some power in the order, and with Father Arto Levan, who leads them all. He put Primujan in a tight corner, to be sure. Dame Guaidra had no choice but to give in to de Gilb's demands and arrest Cormac for trial. She's got him, but rest assured he's comfortable and outside the influence of his former brothers.
To what end? Is he to be sentenced? He risked everything for Vanguard and fought with courage and strength. Without him, ancient Baden would have won the day in your war.
There are rumors that he is to be tried before both court and church. If it comes to that, it will be fair, I promise. Dame Guaidra will preside and will surely mitigate any demands of the brothers upon Cormac with her knowledge of his heroics in ending the war.
What of Milcaela, the barbarian woman, wife of Cormac?
She is well, and within Pelennor with Cormac. They are not ill-treated, I promise you. I came to relay all of this and to extend Dame Guaidra's invitation. I hope you will agree to join us in Pelennor. Your presence would be a great boon to your friend Cormac.
I have already said everything on his behalf. What influence could I possibly bring to such a trial?
You still do not understand, do you? You, who dropped the head of ancient Baden at Dame Guaidra's feet, do not understand the power of your mere presence. You're a hero, boy. Your name is being whispered through every vale in Vanguard. To have you there, at Cormac's side, will surely carry great weight. It will bolster Guaidra's hand in this argument and diminish de Gilb. You shame him, highwayman. For you went where he would not, and you did what he could not. Cormac's stature rises with the highwayman beside him. I beg you to join me. You will find Pelennor comfortable for the winter, and you will do a great favor to this man you call a friend.
Branson turned to Kaedale, who nodded.
My ma, too.
Ah, but that I insist upon.
Callan's blush was not lost on Kaedale.